All right, second hour here. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker on a Tuesday. One Bills Live. Thanks for joining us. And also joining us here for the second hour of the show, senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, also co-host of ESPN's NFL Matchup Show, to kind of go over the progress made by some of the players on the roster of late. And Greg, as always, thanks for giving us some time. I would say that it was interesting to note that in a horrible preseason outcome, all three of Buffalo's drafted defensive linemen flashed. You noticed them in this game, you know, even though the defense as a whole probably didn't play all that well. But T.J. Sanders flashed again on the pass rush. So too did Deion Walker. And Landon Jackson coming off the edge had a couple of plays where you're like, oh, there he is. I'm just kind of curious for your thoughts on that, knowing that, you know, with Ogunjobi and Hoyt going on reserve suspended when we get down to 53, these guys are going to have to play.
Yeah, I mean, I watched, I think Jackson played 37 snaps, and the other two, Sanders and Walker, each played over 30, so they got a lot of work in. You know, we spoke about this last week, and, you know, I'm just really curious to see it develop, but Walker, again, just showed that tendency to play two up right off the snap, and the thing is, he's so gifted in terms of athletic traits for a man that size that if he can just consistently play a little lower, you know, I think there's so much there to work with. And I, you know, it just, again, I'm not a coach. I'm not a defensive line coach, so I'm not going to speak as if I know the answer to that question. Steve, you may have a better way to respond to that than I, but the one thing we do know is that if you do play upright, it doesn't matter how strong or how gifted you are in this league, you're going to have a tough time. But you're right. He did have some positive plays, but you know, that's the only thing about him that would concern me.
Yeah, and I would agree. He's so tall, and he's got some long legs. He is really athletic, is Deion Walker.
Yeah.
But if he, you know, if you bend your knees and get a little more leverage, your size and weight just makes it that exponentially more difficult to stop you. Yeah, when he gets it going, and I like the way he rushes too. He doesn't rush like a big heavy. He's rushing with a little bit of hand movement and trying to slap guys off and trying to get slippery and some wiggle. Which is a little different than most big guys.
No, it's funny you say that, too, because I watched him. Obviously, I watched him this past summer with his tape from 2024, but I watched him last summer with his 2023 tape, and I came away watching that thinking that if this guy had a really good final year at Kentucky, that this guy could be a top 20 pick in the draft. And obviously, the year wasn't quite as good, and some of the warts in his game showed up, which is why he ended up being drafted in the fourth round. But, you know, there's a lot there. I'm just really curious to see if it can come together. On the other hand, Sanders, I think he again showed really well. And Brownie, I know you remember because you remember all this stuff. But, you know, we talked about him leading up to the draft and even when they drafted him. And I really liked his tape a lot coming out of South Carolina. And the thing I always like to see, and I think it's always a positive sign, and I'm not going to sit here and say this means he'll be a great player. You know, none of us know the answer to that question. But he looks similar to the way he played in college. And I always think that's a good sign for a young player, that the traits that they showed in college, they could come into the league and they still can show those traits. Because he's got really good quickness off the ball. I thought he showed a little bull rush power. He showed a one-arm stab as a pass rusher. Because I think his game coming out of South Carolina was built more on quickness than pure power. But he's going to need some power. So that was a positive sign watching the tape.
Yeah, and then with Jackson, I mean, even Coach McDermott today said that he felt that Landon improved from game one to game two. And I think if you watched him in game one, it almost appeared like he had too many thoughts running through his head. He was so wrapped up in what his assignment was. I think it compromised him just playing free. And I think we saw a little more of that freedom in his game against the Bears.
And I think he's moving in that direction. I still think he's thinking about it a little too much because he knows how to use his long arms, and you're not seeing that quite as much. You saw it on a couple of snaps, but I remember in college he showed that constantly. In fact, he had dominant snaps against Will Campbell when they played LSU and, in fact, beat Campbell a number of times, and he used his arm length. my sense is he's still thinking a little bit through the process of how to rush the quarterback. And I think that's normal because now you're playing at a higher level. You know, you probably in your mind think, well, it's not quite going to be as easy as it was. Not that it was easy in college, but it's going to be harder. But I think there's a lot there to him. The one thing that always shows up, guys, and you know this, is the guy plays hard. And I think that's a great starting point because a lot of defense very often is not, you know, looking pretty. It's just playing with tenacity, competitiveness. And, you know, there are more sacks made in the NFL, sort of second reaction sacks, than when you just beat a guy right away. You know, that doesn't happen as often in the NFL as people might think.
So the Bills are also still, and even Sean McDermott referred to it today in his press conference, that they're still looking for the guy to start next to Taylor Rapp at safety. This last game against Chicago, Jordan Hancock got some reps in there, and unfortunately it ended a little early because he got his shoulder dinged and he left. But Hancock is a guy that Brownie and I have been watching. He seems athlete enough to be back there, and they had a timetable, and we've talked about it a lot, where corner, nickel, safety, that a timetable when they were going to sort through all of that. His versatility is why he got drafted. What did you see in his short time on the field the other night?
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, for two games, I think what we've seen is just how aggressive he is. He's got a quick trigger playing downhill. He's very aggressive. You know, he played on the back end as well. He did that at Ohio State. You know, I know he got hurt. I don't know the nature of the injuries, so I don't know if that means, you know, again, he could sit out the last game. That doesn't mean he's not ready week one. Or again, he's a later round pick, so we don't even know what they think of him. Or I certainly don't know that. You guys would know better. But I liked him coming out, and I thought that he could play in the league. You know, it's funny. There was another safety at Ohio State the year before named Ronnie Hickman, who's now going to start for the Browns this year. And in some ways, I thought they were similar kind of prospects. I think Hancock can play in the league, and it would not surprise me if he ends up as a starting player somewhere down the line. We still don't have a good read on Cole Bishop. He only played 11, 12 snaps. I think he played all the snaps that Caleb Williams played. You can't really get on him for being beat on the touchdown because that was a great play call with a switch release, and he was matched on a wide receiver, and he was out leveraged. It's hard to, you know, say that, oh boy, that means he can't play. And there was even one other snap where the ball wasn't thrown or he was matched up on a Dunze when he was number three to trips. But for the most part, he was playing on the back end, and you didn't see a lot of action. So it's hard to get a read in the games. Again, I'm not in practice, but it's hard to get a read in the game as to what Cole Bishop, you know, is at this point.
Yeah, and the problem is he had just come back from a quad injury, so he was on a pitch count in that game. They wanted to hold him to 12 snaps, and that's exactly what he played in the game on the defensive side of the ball. I just think, you know, we're 2.5 weeks from the opener, and they still don't have a defined answer as to who the other safety is going to be, and you can tell it's causing some angst among the defensive staff. Another pass rusher.
As it should. I mean, particularly with who they open with.
The other guy that has been all over the field the first two preseason games has been Michael Hoyt. And I think the reason he got so many snaps last Sunday was because they know he's not playing in the first six games. So it's almost like, let's get him into as much game shape as we can now while he can play. But he has been a menace the first two games.
You know, what's interesting to me, though, and you know, is he's essentially playing defensive end. And, you know, look, we know that the Bills play essentially a four-man D-line. You know, where he came from with the Rams, he was used in a much more versatile way. Again, we don't know what's going to happen when the season starts. You know, and obviously he's not going to play the first six games, so we don't know what happens when he comes back. But, you know, one of the reasons I thought he was such a good player with the Rams was that versatility and the position flexibility. Again, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what their plan is for him. Because he can't play in the first six games, they're probably not worried about moving him all around in the preseason. They just want to get him snaps, as you said, Brownie. But I'm really curious. It's not that he can't rush the quarterback. I mean, he did have a great pass rush. That was against the tight end. So, you know, sometimes when I see an edge rusher beat a tight end, that doesn't necessarily mean he's a great pass rusher. But Hoyt can rush the quarterback, but he can do a lot of different things. So we'll see what happens when he comes back. I mean, that's a ways down the road. You know, that seems like, you know, 5 years from now when we're talking, when they play week, you know, game seven, you know?
Right. So we were talking just before we came on the air about, you know, this it's hard to watch late in these games, these preseason games. So was there anything about this Bills-Bears game? I mean, we had a therapy session here yesterday on our show trying to get through the aftermath of that game. What jumped out? Was there any positives, if any, about that game? I mean, it was really tough to watch.
No, I don't mean to not take these games seriously because, you know, I've been to training camps in my career, Steve. You've been through all this, and you know how important they are for players, you know, players trying to make the team. So I don't want to disparage these games. But it's, for me, because I've become so focused a lot more on tactics and schematics, you know, in regular season games, they're harder games just for me to watch because, you know, I'm not necessarily learning a lot about the schematics and the tactics. So, you know, obviously I made it a point to watch Caleb Williams closely because I know I'm going to be asked about him by everybody. So, you know, obviously I wanted to watch him closely. You know, as far as the Bills, you know, I don't think you can look at the score and have it mean anything. I really don't. Like, you know, look, last year in the first preseason game, they lost to the Bears. I think they gave up over 30 points in that game, if memory serves me correctly. And, you know, do the scores matter in these games? Sure. Do the coaches want the players who are playing to execute and compete at a high level? Of course they do. And they matter to those players because I don't know. Yeah, I don't have the Bills roster right in front of me. You guys would know better. Brownie, how many roster spots do you think are truly going to be up for grabs? Every team's different.
Seven or eight.
Many would you say are truly up for grabs?
7 or 8.
Yeah. So, I mean,
it's a pretty locked-in roster.
Because the Bills obviously are – yeah, they're a really good team. And, you know, so those 7 or 8 matter to the players. I believe me, like I said, I'm not disparaging that at all. But, you know, a lot of teams don't have a lot of roster spots that are up for grabs.
Yeah, they matter to the players. They just don't matter to the team, I guess, is the best way to put it, right? If there's a difference. But, well, yeah.
What do you make of this push by Tyrell Shavers? He's shown up in both preseason games. He's trying to get one of those last receiver spots. And I think the thing that's kind of standing in the way here is they're having a tough time finding a defined role for him on special teams because, as you know, if you're the fifth or sixth receiver, you better help on special teams if you want a jersey on game day. And I think they're having a tough time finding where he fits in that phase of the game. But maybe just speak to what you've seen from him receiver-wise.
Well, one of the things, I mean, you're dealing with a guy that's long, athletic, and can run. And, you know, he lined up outside. I mean, we're looking at the play where he caught the back shoulder fade. I know he only had 2 catches, you know, but that's a back shoulder fade. He can line up outside. You know, I think Josh Allen likes those kinds of throws. You know, he likes to feel that his receivers can make these kinds of plays. I mean, I think that's one reason they drafted Keon Coleman. You know, again, we'll see how the receiver position shakes out. My guess is they probably got, you know, 1, 2, and 3 probably, you know, I would assume pretty much set. Wouldn't you say 1, 2, and 3 would be Coleman, Shakir, and Palmer?
Yes.
So, I mean, then you're dealing with who's 4 and 5. You know, 4 could get, I mean, this is from 2 weeks ago, and you can see, I mean, this guy can run a little bit. He's got some stride length. He can line up on the outside. I agree with you. He'd probably have to play special teams. And special teams with the new rule, with the kickoff rule, is, you know, that's becoming more important than it has been in previous years. So there probably needs to be a place for him there. But you're dealing with a guy, and again, I'm not going to sit here and say if he played a lot, he'd catch 50 balls for 800 yards. You know, none of us know the answer to that. But, you know, those long, athletic guys that can run, there's not 100 of those guys.
Right. This is a team that we noticed last year. The one thing that, well, on the defensive side anyway, and a little bit on the offense, you need a guy that can really take the lid off once in a while and who can stretch it out. You got this quarterback with the arm, and sometimes you never really feel like they air it out enough for the long. I think that's one of the things that was missing from their game last year was the long ball. They hit once or two, but most of their big plays were short throw, long run, and James Cook. So he may give them something they've been looking for.
Yeah, no, it's funny you say that because I just spent, you know, the last couple of days, you know, I've been watching all kinds of NFL stuff going back to last year as well as some of the preseason stuff. And I watched all of Jared Goff's 15-plus yard completions. And you see the impact that Jameson Williams has. Now, Shavers obviously is not Jameson Williams. I'm not trying to make a direct comparison, obviously. I'm just responding to you, Steve, that if you have a guy that can is a vertical dimension, you know, that changes everything in the way you can design your passing game.
Just looking around the league, we got some quarterback decisions that were made, Greg. Joe Flacco in Cleveland, and then today Daniel Jones in Indianapolis. We've seen Flacco in that system. I mean, he came in and led him to the playoffs a couple of years ago. What do you think that Daniel Jones can do for the Colts offense with Shane Steichen?
Well, you know, I think you guys know this. You know, you've been around. Steve, you certainly know it, having played. You know, Brown, you've been around long enough to know this. I think that coaches, no matter what side of the ball you're on, they want to trust their players. You know, and I think that while Daniel Jones is, no one's going to sit here and say, gee, this guy's a top five quarterback in the league. I'm sure the feeling is, and this is my sense of it, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but my sense of it is that they believe that they can line up Daniel Jones and Steichen can call his game and he's going to execute the game plan. Now, maybe it's not going to be special. Maybe it's not going to look unbelievable, but I think that you have a trust factor, whereas with Anthony Richardson, you have no idea what you're going to get. Can he make special plays? Absolutely. But you just don't know. And I think for a coach, I think there's nothing worse than going into a game feeling you just don't know. If the 80 hours or the 100 hours or whatever number of hours these coaches spend during the week game planning and putting things together is going to be executed. They understand there are plays the defense will win just because they win tactically or a guy makes a play. But they want to feel that their quarterback is going to go out there and execute the plan play after play after play. And right now, Anthony Richardson has just not shown the ability to do that. And I think they just feel that Daniel Jones, even though there's nothing quote-unquote special about him, that he can do that better.
You got a guy like Anthony Richardson. We talked about this. I think it's you can see a trend in the NFL where Anthony Richardson came in with, what, 11 or 13 starts as a college quarterback, and you've got
That's
other
right.
quarterbacks coming out with 30-plus starts.
Well, yeah. Daniels and Knicks had 60.
Right, so you've got it's just a better evaluation process, and I think there's going to be fewer and fewer teams rolling the dice on a unicorn of an athlete that they don't know about for a guy who they do know about with a ton of film, and they know exactly what they're getting, or at least a little more accurately what they're getting.
Well, I think now, because there's more quarterbacks that have athletic ability, I think you get caught up in what's the balance between quote-unquote playmakers at the quarterback position, because they can make special plays, versus the ability to line up and make throws from the pocket. Now, both are factors, and you can't say you have to decide what you think is ultimately more important. I think most coaches would say that the ability to throw it from the pocket over the course of a season is more important. But you get so enamored with the guys that can make those special plays. You know, it gets hard. But, you know, Anthony Richardson has not shown the ability to be consistent throwing the ball from the pocket.
But it's not even, you know, making a philosophical decision. It's like, well, you've got this guy or that guy. It's how much can this guy function in the offense and how special is this guy? And you compare the two quarterbacks. Forget the philosophy of having an athletic quarterback. It's who can you win with? And I mean, you think a guy like, you know, these guys in Cleveland – they owe it to the 52 guys on the roster and the coaching staff to give those guys the best chance to win. In Indianapolis, they're looking at you know, Daniel Jones, and thinking, well, he's not special, but at least the other guys get a chance to help.
I mean, I think the way coaches feel is that if we put in a good game plan, and of course coaches feel they're going to, if we put in a good game plan, that our quarterback's going to execute it. And if they don't feel good about the quarterback's ability to execute it snap after snap after snap, then they don't feel they can trust him. That's the bottom line. I mean, I've heard coaches talk like that all the time. We've got to be able to trust the guy.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what makes coaches breathe a little easier on game day for sure. And Shane Steichen's in year three, and he's got to make it happen. So there it is. Greg, thanks as always for the time. We appreciate it. The next time we talk to you, we'll have a 53-man roster.
We'll know for sure. We'll know those 7 or 8 spots we think that
That's
are
right.
up for grabs. That'll be good.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk to you then, Greg. Thanks as always.
All right.
That's
all right.
Senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, joining us as he does during the football season on Fridays. So we look forward to those conversations when we get to the games that count.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
All right, well, this is the very first time I've ever been watching the YouTube feed when the countdown clock that G has up there during the commercial break for Sal's appearance. Have you seen this?
No.
I don't know if this happens for other regularly scheduled guests or if it's just a Sal value-added feature.
Yeah.
It is just a there's a little countdown clock up in the upper left-hand corner ticking down the minutes and seconds, and it's a little picture, a little, you know, Sal's face in a little circle, and it got to zero. Nothing happened. Like, bells and whistles didn't go off and, like, confetti, but still, I'd never seen it reach zero. So,
well, I mean, Sal's on the station 14 times a day, so I feel like if he didn't have like a little emblem, it would feel like maybe we weren't doing enough.
And this is only 13, so
yeah,
I don't know what you're doing, Sal, but maybe Zach will be looking for you on the nightcap tonight. Anyway, welcome back from Chicago. I heard some of you this morning because I was out running around the city a bit. A tough one, to say the least. I mean, it's not even really the score. It's more some individual performances that really were tough. Most notably, I mean, we spent the whole hour, I think, talking about Cole Bishop, Sal.
Yeah, good afternoon, you guys. It was tough because it was just not the kind of performance you want to see from individual players, from units, from position groups, you know, regardless of who is on the field. And whether it's the ones against the twos or whatever, you have to play better than you did yesterday, you know, and I'll sound like a coach or player when I say this, but that's just not the standard. You have to play and be up to your standard, which is better than that and higher than that. And it's understandable if the Bears first team offense and first team defense, you know, beats the Bills second team offense and second team defense, but the way they beat them. And then after that, having the twos against the twos and the threes against the threes just continued to go that way. Not the kind of performance the Buffalo Bills were looking for, not the kind of performance Sean McDermott was looking for, certainly. And to a man in the locker room, not the kind of a performance they were looking for. And I'll say that, like, I know it's preseason. I get it. And, you know, you walk around and you talk to these guys and they understand that doesn't impact their record. But I think they felt a sense of that, like a lot, in fact, a lot of that, which is they need to be better next week. That was not the way they want. That was not the performance they wanted to put on film.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if even, I don't know, if it rises to the level of embarrassing. You know, just because you've got guys that are trying to make an impression, make a football team, you know, in a depth capacity. And yeah, when it evened out, like, of course, like the ones against the twos, all right, you know, I accept that. I also accept that the Bears would have poured a little more, maybe a lot more, into the game, considering they're at home. It's a new coach with a new system and a really hot former number one overall pick just last year, quarterback. You want to kind of like get some momentum going, get everyone on the team believing, if not the fan base believing, that, like, yeah, we're going to make some headway here. So, you know, it's crooked to start. I think we can all understand and appreciate that. But, yeah, the rest of the game, like the other 45 minutes or more of the game, I think are as big an alarm bell as I can remember in a preseason.
For sure. And, you know, Sean McDermott obviously talked about that after the game, and he was asked a few questions. One was specifically about Cole Bishop, and he talked about the safety position. You guys referenced, you know, something he said about that, and we can get into all that. But, you know, you only have one more preseason game left here. And then it's go time against the Baltimore Ravens, by the way, on Sunday Night Football here in Buffalo. And, yes, you have – now, if you want to look at it this way, you could be a little bit more, like, you know, feel better about it if you say, well, it's still 3 weeks away, right? You have 3 weeks to get things right and get on the practice field, clean up what you need to clean up. And last year, the Bears beat the Bills in preseason game one, 33-6.
Right.
And it was very similar where they clearly last year game planned. They had a lot of things they wanted to feel confident about. And there's nothing wrong with that. If that's the way they want to approach it, that's fine. Every team wants to approach it their own way. But you have 3 weeks left here to get ready, but only one more game. And it really, you wonder now, like, how do you approach that game and what you want to see? Because To me, like, you got to have those guys go back out there and perform again. I did the Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast with Matt Bove this morning, and one of the things that he brought up was, does Sean send a message now and say, well, you know what, the starters have to play a little bit on Saturday? I think that's a bridge too far. I don't think that's going to happen. And I also would tell you, I don't know what message that's sending then. They weren't on the field for this.
Right.
The guys who were on the field were the guys that need to go out there and show that they can perform. Chris Tabor, the special teams coach, said to us a few weeks ago, he said the goal is that if somebody doesn't make the team here, they make the team somewhere. That's what you're trying to do. Well, what you did last night, what you put on film, doesn't help anyone get to that particular spot, right? So I think that everybody has a collective investment here, whether that's personally in trying to make the NFL roster or making the Buffalo Bills better.
Sal, how worried do you think they are internally about Bishop at this point?
I think they're worried about where the position stands right now on, what day is today? August 18th. And what that translates to September 7th, I still think they believe in Cole Bishop as a player who's going to be a good player for them. I think the problem is what has happened here over going back to last training camp and now in this training camp, and it's just that he has not been on the field enough to have these reps to get in a position where they feel comfortable that he knows everything he's supposed to do and be able to do it. I don't think there's a long-term, like, pull the chute on this guy after a year and a half, you know, type of worry on Cole Bishop. We've seen players throughout, especially in the McDermott era here, we've seen players go into year two and even through year two, like, I don't know. And then year three, they become a little bit better, right? Like, that's kind of been the jump for a lot of players, been year two to year three. I don't think there's any worry like that. I think they believe they have a guy that's going to be a starter for them in this league. But I think right now, like with go time coming up here, I think there's some worry here, guys. Like they have the Baltimore Ravens coming to town, the team that they just beat in the AFC champion, the Bills beat in the AFC divisional round, last year, who really moved the ball on them and threw some big passes, long passes down the field in the snow. Like right now, you don't have the ability to combat that with what you're looking at on the field and what you've seen.
Yeah, Terrell Bernard comes to mind as a guy that in year two, he was being asked to step up and take the place of Tremaine Edmonds, and he missed all of camp. I remember being worried about it all summer, and, you know, the regular season got here, he got on the field, and there's been no looking back to such an extent that he just got a nice contract extension in this offseason. So it has happened that a player we would have spent a reasonable amount of time wringing our hands over in the summer, missed time. We were worried about it not being a stable position or even a position of, you know, strength for the team. And it turned out that it was fine. So, or better than that, even. We'll see if Bishop can do the same thing. I mean, I do think, in fairness, as much as he's eaten a lot of it today for that performance that was only, you know, a handful of snaps in the game, I think it is fair to recognize that he just returned to practice on any kind of a full-time basis on Friday, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Friday was really the first time he'd been on the field in a team capacity in quite a while. So, yeah, I think that's right. I'm looking right now. If I remember, Taron Johnson was in this boat. After 2 years, he had some injuries. I'm looking, he had started seven games his second year. In fact, and then in he remember he turned Johnson was he had lost his spot to Cam Lewis for a quick minute, right? Like in a game, and then he came back in. Like his third year is when he really started to come alive, Taron Johnson. There's been examples of that. So I don't think there's any long term panic on Cole Bishop. But yes, in the short term right now, getting ready here, yeah, this guy has not practiced. He needs to be on the field. Now when Sean McDermott talks about time on task, communication, that's exactly right. He needs that with Taylor Rapp. He needs that with everybody on the defense, though. You know, the touchdown that was given up, you know, that's another. That's pieces of communication. Watch who he's playing with, what they're looking at. It's also, you know, there's no game planning. We know that. I think, and I would probably lean towards they wouldn't play it the same way, right? If you're playing a regular season, there's some things about that play where maybe there's some matchups the Bills wouldn't want in that particular situation. But that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter when it comes to you're not, you know, near your guy close enough or you're not making a tackle. Those are things that you should be able to do still when you're on the field. So, yeah, the communication piece when it comes to the entire defense has got to be better from Cole Bishop, and the physical play has to be better from Cole Bishop. And the other part of it is Taylor Rapp has had some injuries, right? And when he's been on the field, he's made some plays for the Buffalo Bills. But I don't think anyone is super secure right now in Taylor Rapp and his position there. And then where do you go from there? You have DeMar Hamlin. And honestly, guys, Bulldog, you said it earlier, and I'm going to agree with you. At some point here, maybe we start to think about and hear about Jordan Hancock getting a little bit more of a look here. Because I think through two preseason games, he's looked better than Cole Bishop.
I definitely agree with that. I think it's notable, Nate mentioned this, how quickly McDermott seemed to shut that down last week when it came up, right? But I feel like the door's open. I was really bummed out to hear that he got hurt when he did in the game, because I felt like if he could stay on the field, and maybe he will. We'll see. Tomorrow we'll find out, I would imagine, some idea of what happened to him with his shoulder. I know he said after the game that he was fine. But, yeah, I feel like that door, we were, I think, cracking it open last week, and I feel like maybe even McDermott himself has to realize that he might have to open the door.
Maybe, that's right. The fact that Cam Lewis was hurt and didn't play in this game as well kind of complicates things a little bit because, you know, Jordan Hancock plays nickel corner. He plays safety. Now, he was hurt on a play where he was playing nickel corner. He wasn't at safety that play, but he predominantly has been playing safety. I think that's where they see him fitting right now. I think he's fitting in at safety, and considering what that position has looked like, considering everything we're talking about with Cole Bishop, I think that's kind of where you have to fit him now. And then the fact that the Bills have, you know, Brandon Bean has openly said, I think Cam Lewis is the best backup nickel corner in the league. Maybe that's where he just fits and you just keep him there. And then you let Jordan Hancock play safety. And then along the way, they can both kind of still do both positions and you teach Jordan Hancock still nickel corner as the season progresses and his career progresses. But I do think that he's a candidate here to at least get a little bit more looks. But could they even go outside the organization? The quote was, I believe, we have to see what we have there and what we need. And right. I think that's interesting.
What does that mean
by what we need?
Right. Yeah, I feel like when I hear that is...
It's alarm bells a little bit.
Yeah, right. Well...
I mean, this is the week, right? If you're going to...
Yeah.
This is the week where you start to look at those things. If you look back at most, you know, NFL transactions towards the end of, you know, camps, they start to happen. They start to percolate a little bit this week. They might not occur until after the preseason game, but you start to hear things because this is it. This is the final week. I mean, guys, a week from tomorrow is the roster cutdown day.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you have to get to 53. And, you know, there's going to be different moves and roster gymnastics and IRs and pup lists and all that kind of stuff that's going on. And then there's going to be moves. And every year we see it around the league. I just wonder, is that something they're looking at outside of the organization? I think they really want, no doubt, right? We all know this. They really, really want it to be Cole Bishop working out, and he's the guy, the second round pick that, you know, they drafted and they can rely on. But if they go back and watch this film and say, man, like, there's just such a gap right there, we don't know if he can get there, then they're going to have to figure out, where do we turn to it right now, and do we have that on our roster?
And Sale, I mean, listen, they lost 38 to nothing, and I think it's important that this is sort of the thing we've all been talking about. This was sort of like a... just make a play and have us stop talking about the safety room. And ultimately, that's not what happened. But this was a failure at a lot of levels yesterday. I thought Ryan Vandermark had a tough game. A couple of offsides. I thought he could have been called for three or four more false starts in that game. The one position that I looked at, too, that I've been, I think, very disappointed in, Sal, is the tight end position behind Dawson Knox and Dalton Kincaid. And this is a team that lost Quinton Morris, a guy that they've really relied on, liked a lot, played a core special teams role for them. And when was asked, came in, he made catches and was where he was supposed to be at all times. You know, I know they've got a young rookie there, and Zach Davidson was a darling last year. That has not carried over this year. Your thoughts on the backup tight ends behind Dawson Knox and Dalton Kincaid, knowing that the last couple of years, Knox doesn't play in every game. He's been banged up. And same with Dalton Kincaid. I don't know whether I'm super concerned about the third string tight end or how much I should be, but it's a team that has had to rely on it more than I think, you know, they've probably wanted to in the years past.
Yeah, Zach Davidson, people that might not realize, he's in his fifth year in the NFL. I mean, you know, he's been around. He's with the Minnesota Vikings, came to the Bills. He had a year where he had a knee injury and he had to be he was out for the entire year. He's been on the practice squad a couple times. I've never felt that he would make this team, but he's always been a nice guy to have, break glass in case of emergency if one of your pass catching tight ends, and I'll call that Dawson Knox, even though he's not, you know, like a Dalton Kincaid, they're a little different. You know, that you can rely on him. And Quinton Morris has been on the team, but I think we all know the We all know the replacement there is Jaxon Hawes, right? Mm-hmm. Jaxon Hawes is the Quentin Morris replacement. He's not going to be relied on to catch passes. He's going to be relied on to block. So, yeah, I mean, if they have to rely on, you know, going that deep on the depth chart at tight end, obviously it's not ideal right now. But that being said, you know, you hope that's not the case. And Jaxon Hawes is going to be on the field a lot more to block than anything else. But you brought up offensive line, so I'll go there because I agree with you. Ryan Vandermark, not a good day, not a good night for Vandy. He had two false starts on the very first possession.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got beat also a couple of times, and one resulted either in a sack or a real tough pressure. But well, he owned it after the game. He talked about it. And one thing we talked about in the locker room, and guys, this is not an excuse. It's not, you could just accept it because, but it is true. This does happen. This happened with Dawson Knox last week. Remember Dawson Knox first play, the false start last week against the Giants at home, right? Like this happens, which is, when you're not used to playing with the same offensive line next to you and you're not used to the same cadence in the same center, like all those things, especially on the road, I know it's preseason, those little things can matter to you, A, not having a proper stance at the get-off, B, going a little bit early, right? Again, not an excuse, but these things happen. This is why coaches, Sean McDermott, talk about communication, cohesiveness, playing together. It's not just the safeties. It's the O-line, and this was an O-line last night that, you know, was put together, and they're not your starters, but they're going to have to be relied on, some of these guys. I mean, heck, Connor McGovern did not dress last night. When he told reporters after the game that he tweaked his hamstring. I mean, so now you're dealing with another interior guy, right? Cedric Van Pran Granger is still on PUP. Alec Anderson has not returned yet. So right now, I mean, there's multiple issues with the injuries are compounding the issues. Because you're, even if the guys are going to be back by week one, you're not getting these reps with everyone who needs to be getting reps together.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline with us here on WGR, pouring over, wreckage feels a little strong for a preseason game, but still it was 38-0 and not much of anything really went very well. Sal, what was that? I read arrows up and arrows down, but I forget now what the arrows up were as we're talking. Like what went well yesterday? Or even overall on the trip to Chicago, if you want to circle back to Friday,
hey,
if you want.
You want me to give an arrow up to going to Wrigley? You want to give an arrow up going on the Architect boat cruise? We can do that, you know. That was good.
Chicago, beautiful city. Yeah. Right.
Friday was – so let me just kind of give you a big picture, and then I'll get to my arrows up from the game. You know, I really take in this weekend as a multi-day, multi-game kind of event, right? It's not just last night. It's Friday. And I do think the two teams approached it differently, whereas Friday meant a lot to the Bills. They wanted to get a lot of work in for their starters, make sure that they get a lot of things done that they can say, you know what, that's good, and we'll back off them. And they did that. And we talked Friday, Bulldog, after the scrimmage, after the practice. I mean, it's 2+ hours of teamwork. It wasn't even – there was no DB against wide receiver one-on-one. They did team almost the whole time. It was 11-on-11. It was 7-on-7. It was red zone. It was goal line. It was everything. And I think the Bills and the Bears both got a lot out of that. I'm not going to sit here and tell you the Bills won it, the Bears won it. I just think you could pick out lots of parts that were very beneficial for both. I thought it was a really, really good day. And that really kind of set the tone for the Bills to say, okay – that's great. We don't need Josh out there. We don't need these other people. I mean, pretty much every starter other than Cole Bishop, you know, wound up sitting. The Bears treated it a little bit differently. Yes, that was important for them. But since the beginning of training camp, from everybody I've talked to in Chicago, they are taking every single day, every single rep, very physical, very serious. Like, they're trying to set a culture. They're trying to set a tone. Mm-hmm. And last night meant something to them. I'm not telling you here that it didn't mean anything to the Bills. They didn't care. They laughed it off. But certainly the Bears wanted to make sure they continued what they're trying to do here. And they have a vision in mind. And there's nothing wrong with that. And that's why they came out and they kind of just had the pedal to the metal right away. I thought the Bills played like a team yesterday overall, a team that was tired and wanted to get home after 4 days in Chicago. I really did. And again, not an excuse, but it happens. And I think that's what we saw that compounded a lot of the stuff that we saw yesterday on the field last night. I did give an arrow up to the punter, Brad Robbins. I know it sounds funny that, you know, he's one of the lone bright spots, but he's had a nice preseason. He told us in the locker room that he read and heard things people saying about him in the offseason. He doesn't have a big leg, so he really worked on that. And I think he's shown a big leg, but more than anything, he's directionally punting well. And look, if he can do that in the regular season and really place it where they need it, that's going to help their defense a ton. I gave an arrow up to Frank Gore. He had one blemish, and of course it was a big one. It was the fumble. He was bracing himself for contact in front. It came from behind him. There was a little peanut punch. But Frank Gore, once again, led the team in yards from scrimmage. There's probably no spot for Frank Gore on this roster. But he might be like sneakily giving himself a shot on another team's roster if there's an injury around the league, and that would be great for him. And that's what you love to see. And I do think Jordan Hancock played pretty well, so I gave him an arrow up as well. Yes, he did have the injury later. Hopefully there's nothing serious there.
I know they had 180 yards of total offense or something, Sal, but I also wanted to get your thoughts on Tyrell Shavers, who I thought, you know, in a couple of throws, both from Mike White and from Mitch Trubisky, like kind of looks like the guy that they were looking to in terms of the reserve receivers on the field. Overall, I mean, I don't know where you stand and how much maybe has changed for you since when camp opened to today, August 18th. I don't know if you threw a percentage on his likelihood of making this 53-man roster this year. I think we all agree it could have been as close as anybody last year for him making. He was probably 54 or 55. What are your thoughts about his chances of really making this 53-man roster this year after really knocking on the door the last two seasons?
It's going to come down to the same thing that we talked about last year. And I like Tyrell Shavers a lot, right? I really do. I mean, he works his butt off and he makes plays. The simple question is this: does he offer enough outside of playing on the field at wide receiver to justify being the last wide receiver? Because that's just the reality of any team. This is not just a Buffalo Bills-centric thing for everyone to understand. This is the way it works in the NFL. If you're going to be the last receiver on the roster, you have to play special teams, because otherwise it's not justifying a spot as wide receiver because you have enough guys already. So what are you talking there? Are you talking five wide receivers? I don't think he cracks that unless you talk about moving off Curtis Samuel, which, by the way, could be in the window right now, right? Because there's a guy that we still haven't seen, and McDermott's been talking about getting him back, and, you know, you got to get him on the field. So sure, we could do that. Are you talking about keeping a sixth wide receiver? If you do, that guy absolutely is almost exclusively going to play a ton of special teams. That's not Tyrell Shavers. I mean, it's just not. It's not his game. That could be LaVisca Chenault. So you could make the argument. I hate saying it like this because I feel like I'm like downing Tyrell Shavers. I'm not. I just know how NFL rosters are constructed, and that particular spot has to be a guy that gives you a little bit of versatility around the football field in a 60-minute game.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, because you look at the depth chart at receiver, Shakir's not. I mean, maybe he'll catch some punts, but he's not playing special teams. Mm-hmm. Keon Coleman's not playing special teams. Elijah Moore's has been not a special teamer.
Right.
Same with Samuel. There's your top four. So now you're to five. So yeah, if Shavers, Sally, he covered a couple of kicks or punts yesterday. Like, is there, even if it's not his strong suit, do you think like he can do enough there to crack it? Because they, not only do you want it for him, they kind of need a guy there.
He might be able to. And I do love the fact, I will say, I am encouraged for his sake that they're using him there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to see. I mean, they're trying to see, can he do this? Did I tell you the story about Friday, the gunner drill, right? I think I did, Bulldog,
yes.
Right?
Yeah,
I saw it on Twitter, yeah.
Yeah, he was playing gunner. It was a gunner drill. It was a punt drill. He's got two bears in front of him. And he just kind of physically beat the first guy off the line who got his hands on him. And then he did a little up and under swim move on the guy who came over to get him after on the double team. And he just smoked two guys. And the crowd, the sideline went nuts for him. It was great. And he gets to the end and he flexes. It was great. It was such great energy. And I love to see that, right? And I think his teammates are rooting for him. So sure, I do think, could you envision him in a Mac Hollins type of role like that? Yeah, I think you could, but does he get on the field as much as they used Mac Hollins last year?
Probably
given what they've
not.
Done at wide receiver?
Probably not.
Not.
Right.
That's where the rub is going to come in for him, right? And then you look at it and say, well, what else do you need? Because right now, you might need another veteran linebacker. I mean, after what we saw last night, does Shaq Thompson make the team? He's got flexibility. You know, he could play. Is that a guy that you want on your 53-man roster, right? What are you looking at as far as corner is concerned with, you know, Max Harrison being out? And where does that stand in keeping a guy? You got to probably keep Dorian Strong because you're not going to waive a draft pick right now this early in his career. There's only so many spots available here.
Sal, excellent work in Chicago. I enjoyed following along while Owen and I were in Boston.
Yes, how was it?
We had a great time. We had an absolutely great time. Like, maxed out the amount of time we were there. We did enough for me to feel like it was worth doing. You know what I mean? It wasn't just the game.
It.
We did a little sightseeing too. We were there early enough because we flew, which meant we had to leave really early because the return flight, you know, the cheapest, because I'm a cheapskate, was, you know, real early in the morning, 7:30 in the morning. But yesterday, but it worked out great. So, yeah, cheers to you, cheers to us, cheers to baseball.
Awesome.
Right.
And you saw a win, right? They beat the Marlins.
Yeah, they hung on. They were up 7-0, and they got 7-5, and eventually they needed to bring in Chapman for one out in the ninth. To get it home, but they did win. All right,
I love that for you and Owen. And real quick, but you did not get the Thunderbirds buzzing the tower like they did at Wrigley while we were there.
No,
right?
I definitely did not.
He did get a Yankees suck cheer though.
Yeah,
so
I was really happy about that.
For
my son got the full
different
Boston
strokes
experience
for different folks.
Right. They're playing the Miami Marlins, and it's we got the Yankees
an August game. Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right.
I know you guys got to go here. Nate, the Syracuse has named the Notre Dame transfer their starting quarterback.
And guess who plays? I think is it October 22nd or November 20th? Mm-hmm. They play each other. So it'll be Notre Dame.
Should I be excited about this or not?
I think, honestly, Sal, I kind of wish. Right now, the Notre Dame is the only team in the country in the top 25 that has not named a starting quarterback yet. I'm a little worried that maybe they should have found a way to keep Steve Angeli. So is he going to be a 5-star recruit and be Kyle McCord? I don't think so, but I think he'll be a good steady presence for you guys.
All right, Sal, we got to go. Thanks for this. We'll, of course, connect later on in the week with Sal. Sal on the Western Hotline. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a
case.
Might
need a case after yesterday.
Rolling along here on Sabres Live from the Amherst Alumni Golf Tournament. Rochester will be beginning their 70th season of hockey in early October. Here for every single one of them, Don Stevens.
Not quite.
Hall of Famer Don Stevens.
You know about every one of them, though. You've done your homework. If you weren't at a game, you caught up on it. But before we start, I mentioned Happy Gilmore, too.
Yes.
Do you remember the amount of time I rented Happy Gilmore on the bus when
that and Caddyshack and Wedding Singer? They got so sick of some. You know, the thing is that they've used all those movies. We don't even put movies on the bus anymore.
No,
everybody's got
their own
things that they're watching.
I used to walk up to the front of the bus, and there would be Donnie on the left there, Brian McCutcheon there, and I would put a movie in. He'd be like, "What are you putting? Oh, we're going to watch Happy Gilmore. Marty, it's the fifth time this year. Can you pick another movie? I'm going to bed." Boom. He'd be done.
That's true. Hey, I got to tell you. So here at the golf course, which is a beautiful day, great golf course, we're trying to do this video setup with Marty, which I don't think he even knows it
yet. Oh, my gosh. I drove right by it.
All right. So here's what happens. We get out, and somebody says, "Where's Marty?" Well, he's in the second group back. He'll be coming through shortly. So the people get their cameras out. They get it all set up, lined up. We get positioned and everything, all set for Marty when he comes up. And all of a sudden, he comes flying up the cart path around the corner, and everyone goes, "Marty," and he's going, "I gotta go. I'm late." And his cart's on an angle like this, and he's flying. Had to be doing 50 miles an hour.
My cart is flying.
He just flew on by. So. Well, now they had to tear down. I don't know when we're going to catch up to them.
I felt so bad because I tried to wait as long as I could because I'm playing with my group, and it was 11:50, and I'm like, okay, I hit a beautiful 3-wood. I got to go. So I texted Duffer and producer Jeff, "I'm on my way." And I come around the corner, and they're like, "Marty." I'm like, "I got to go to the show." I'm running right by it. So, yes.
It was,
I'm sorry.
It was hilarious.
The Amherst Hall of Famer, the man who has a press box named after him at Blue Cross Arena. That would be the Don Stevens press box. You get excited to see who on days like today when you're around Amherst alum.
Oh, it's just amazing. I have no idea that some of the people that are going to be here that are here, like, for example, John Bednarski.
John Bednarski gave me a cigar.
Is that right? Of course.
He's right behind me. He looks good, by the way.
He's like 200 pounds lighter. But,
he is.
He was, for those that don't know, he was my first broadcast partner here for the first 20 years that I was here in Rochester. Wow. And he lives in Florida and lives the life of luxury, absolutely. And some of the other people that have come in are... our Dougie Gibson, and yeah. And there's Dave Fenves and Davey Perrow are here.
Yeah,
from
talked about Dave Perrow.
Yeah, and just it's just a this is a great event.
John Bednarski goes, Marty's a great interview until he starts swearing in French, and then you got to beep it out. And which we, like, I remember when he was here. Like, I think my first year, he did it until, what, the late 90s?
So it would have been 76 to 96.
Yeah, I want to say, yeah. Like, he came back.
Did he go out on top after the Calder Cup win?
You know what? It would have been, right?
It would have been, yeah.
Yeah, it would have been. Then Rick Seeling came in, and Rick was here the next 17 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's here today too.
Yeah, so. I saw Sod earlier. So
Razor's here.
Yeah.
Razor's here. I saw Rob. Because we have a Zoom call later at 4:30 today. So Razor goes, "Are you going to be on that?" I'm like, "Yes, I will be." And I totally forgotten about it. So good on Razor to remind me of my business schedule. But yeah, John Bednarski behind our group. He's like, he has a little Ziploc with a bunch of cigars. He goes, "Marty, you want one?"
Always got the Stogies.
I grabbed one. It's in the cart now. I'll fire it up later. But he has a Guinness hat on. And he's like, "I went to the factory, did a tour."
Yeah,
like,
just, he's got about stories. 2 weeks ago. He was in Ireland, yeah.
So he's got stories. He's awesome.
They call it a factory or maybe a brewery.
A brewery factory. Okay. It's a lot of everything. But yes, so I love that
after
you brought
after you've been
him
there
up.
10 minutes, you don't call
exactly.
it anything anyway.
Exactly. It's heavy.
Splitting the G, try to split the G there as much as you can. But no, you're right. There's some great alumni. Professor Leggio is here as well, David Leggio, who's an Amherst alumni, but also did the Portland little bit when the Sabres had their farm team in Portland, and then played in Europe and whatnot. So he's here. So there's.
So we did do our video with Leggio.
Did you?
Yeah, he stuck around for it.
It was probably award-winning, is my guess.
Yeah, well. So the whole
he is funny.
The whole concept is that I'm supposed to be the golf sideline reporter, right?
Oh.
And talking quietly, but the thing is that I'm up pretty close and talking. And so in his swing, what they say about him, he has an innovative way of cheating in the world of sports. I don't know.
The old fair play scandal?
The fair play scandal.
The old tip the net over.
Oh, so, Don, last year I played an alumni game for the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto. And in the middle of the game, like, it's free wheeling. There's no, like, they come in on a 2-on-0. And I turn around and I knock the net off.
You did.
And like, nobody was laughing. Like, I was the only one that knew why. Everybody was like, "What the heck is Marty doing?" And I'm like, "You guys have never seen the clip of Leggio doing it?" Which was awesome. They didn't think it was funny. I thought it was hilarious.
Oh, it was hilarious. It was even more hilarious live.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that, you know, sometimes I get a little tongue-tied, and I think that was one of those, what's he doing?
So what year is this for you? 40?
This will be 40 here, 58 overall.
Wow.
Holy cow.
That's amazing.
Excited? Like, what does it feel? Here is mid-August, as Marty likes to say.
Well, I tell people, say, well, what's it like? I say, well, physically, it's not all that great. But the thing is that I've lived my whole life with 20-something-year-old professional athletes, and so I feel like I'm 25 years old, and feel like I'm 26.
But what's the difference? Like, I mean, last year in the playoffs, you guys go to Laval. Laval's got the state-of-the-art facility.
Oh, it's
and
great
it's
place.
Great place.
Great rink.
Even my days, and I go back in my days, like, we used to play Glens Falls Arena and, like, Syracuse when Syracuse, well, it doesn't change much, but it wasn't, like, you know, the old barns. Like, you've got all these state-of-the-art buildings. You go to Cleveland, and it's a state-of-the-art building.
Yeah.
And you're getting a lot of that. So what's that difference in the atmosphere and the AHL buzz?
Well, I'm one that I like the newer buildings.
Okay.
But everybody else seems like they love the old building. Best example, perhaps, is Hershey.
Hershey, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Hershey Park Arena and Giant Center, which it is now. And the thing about Hershey Park was in order to get to my broadcast spot, I had to walk down through the seats and then walk across the armrests of the seats to get into my booth, which was about as big as this table down here. That was about how big it was. But the best part about that was the fans. I could reach out and touch the fans, and they were just great. In fact, there was one couple that sat on my right side that I got Christmas cards up until maybe 3 years ago.
No way.
I think they were just fabulous people. Hey, do you need a drink? Do you want it? You know, they were great. But
back in those days, you probably said yes. We have to decline all the invitation to drinks we get.
Yeah,
on the set at the arena.
That Hershey rink is so steep. When you took me on that little tour of it, you told me that back in the day they wouldn't even serve alcohol because like dangerous. Like it was so steep that was not. Like, they just couldn't. Like, there was just too high risk. So.
In Canada, the old buildings had a nice picture of the Queen.
Yeah. Yeah.
In Hershey, they had that big clock, right? Yeah. They had that big clock at the one end that was probably so old that that's what they used before they had some digital stuff.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah, do you remember the old building in Winnipeg with the Queen at the end? And that was certain, yeah.
In some of the smaller rinks, like I'm thinking Western Hockey League, because I, you know, toiled there for a little bit from a broadcasting standpoint. There were like, because you're describing how to get into that location in Hershey. I feel like a lot of the Western League ones, like you had to like climb a ladder to get into this little box, which is basically like, you know, really cheap.
Nuts and bolts hanging
but
on
the,
to it.
But the effort required to actually get up and in there was just ridiculous.
Well, I remember one building was Flint, Michigan. Uh-huh. This was in I was in Sioux City in the U.S. League when it was semi-pro. Yeah. And you went into the IMA Arena or something in Flint. And to get to the press box, there's a pillar up behind the last seat that's about so square, and it has rungs on the side of the pillar. So you'd climb up this ladder, and then I used to have to take my belt off, put it around the handle on my kit, and carry a rope with me, so when I got up, I could haul the equipment up into, well,
hey,
that's not much different than it is in Syracuse right now.
Do you miss the Maritimes? Like Fredericton, St. John's, St. John's. Do you miss that?
Moncton,
because that was always Moncton. That was always a fun trip for me.
Oh,
I went to St. John's, Newfoundland twice. And, yeah, you'd have to fly in there, and then you didn't have a charter, so you didn't fly after the game. So you hung out on George Street there and partied a little bit. But, like, St. John's was fun. Did you love going there?
Loved it there. You'd go to some place in the Maritimes. You'd go into a bar and go to have a cold one or whatever and say, hey, you want a beer? Yeah, please.
Yeah.
They'd bring you six.
Mm. Did you ever kiss the cod?
No.
No?
No, I missed
that
one. That's
the thing down in St. John's, Newfoundland. Yeah.
No, I missed that one. Uh-huh. Oh, they were great trips. We used to go twice a year, and they were 14-day trips, because we'd go out and we'd take the circuit of the Maritime teams twice, and then come. So those were great trips.
Well, they used to have a team in Prince Edward Island, which was Charlottetown Senators, right? They were the Ottawa Senators team.
Yeah.
So you'd go to Prince Edward Island, Moncton, Fredericton, St. John, fly over to St. John's. That was like five games right there.
Sometimes, because we flew generally out of Toronto, sometimes we'd catch Newmarket on the way.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And we always stopped in Halifax.
Was it one of your places that you described to me along the way? Was it Grand Island, Nebraska?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I meant to text you very recently on one of my little cross-country journeys. You know, you're sitting there looking at the display on your flight path.
Yeah.
And honest to God, it said Grand Island. Because you're like, what? How is there a Grand Island in the middle of, like, the driest part of the country? Right?
I never figured that out either.
Who flew to Rochester, Minnesota? Whose dad flew to
Osland.
Noah Osland's dad flew to Rochester, Minnesota this year. And when he got in his rental car and put the address, he goes, no, I'm like 15 hours away. He goes, you're in the wrong Rochester. So you thought you were in the wrong Grand Island.
So I had an in-law that did somewhat the same thing and told them that we were in Rochester they didn't make it there, but they were trying to figure out how do they fly to Minneapolis or where they were asking you.
Oh, no, yeah. That's the wrong Rochester, but yes, Noah Osland. And then got him on a flight from Rochester, Minnesota, and got to Rochester, New York. So
that was after Yuri Kulik had told us the story about botching the Christmas plans with his brother to Minnesota.
Yeah.
Showed up at Pearson in Toronto, and they said, sir, this flight is for February 24th, not December 24th.
Minor details.
The finer details, yes. Now, because of that, I double-check dates. I just booked tickets for my daughter to fly out to California.
Yeah, but you know what I'm struggling with lately, which is your big thing? Keys phone wallet.
Oh, no.
Dude, I am forgetting stuff every single day. I'm to the point where I almost need to put a huge note on the door frame.
Phone wallet keys. Yeah. And now phone wallet laptop keys.
You can get away without the laptop.
As long as you've got, as long as you don't forget names, that's where I'm at right now. I look at these people down here in the golf course, and there's guys out there that I've seen for 30, 40 years. Or the heck's his name? I can't remember his name right now. You know, that's the worst part when you get to be
playing
this age.
You got the person that they do it right. So I ran into this guy downstairs. He goes, "Marty, Ray Maluda." I'm like, "Yes." And as soon as he said the name, I remembered, but I could, maybe I looked at him weird and I was like, "I know this guy. And what's his name?" Right up, Ray Maluda. And I was like, "Thank you, Ray. You're right. Yes. How you doing?" So then I'm like, I just texted with him like last week or the week before, but I'm like, you know, the face sometimes with the names, they don't connect. Yeah. He did that perfectly for me.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, and you know, we've had, I mean, what you guys do in promoting Rochester is outstanding, and we really appreciate it. Pumping this golf course or all of our other events and upcoming games, and keeping Buffalo in their minds that there is another part of the organization is so important. And again, I say we do appreciate it so much, what you guys do for us, for Rochester, until Pagoulas came along, Buffalo really didn't know much about Rochester, and it just seems like it's a whole different world that now the organization is tied together. We actually are made to feel part of the staff and the organization, and the tie with the hockey department is so good, so great. I'm just really ecstatic over what's happened over the last few years.
And I'm going to give Warren a big shout out because, like, the list of players, as you mentioned, in this event today, alumni and people that have come back, or even local people that maybe didn't have the ties to Buffalo or Rochester but lived here and are part of this, the list is long. There's a long list this year, and it's awesome to see that because it feels like a reunion every year we come to the event.
Yeah, it is. It's just outstanding. So,
and you're the headmaster. You're the MC headmaster. You do it all.
Yeah. Never gets old sitting next to a couple of Amherst Hall of Famers. Let me tell you that.
Thank you. So good to see you guys.
Great to see you.
My dad can still say thank you for teaching them English all these years. He listened on the radio, you know, AM radio, all the way in Quebec, right? Yeah. He got in his truck, and he'd be, "Marty, what does it mean when Don says, and hangs on?" I'm like, "That's because I didn't give up a rebound. I hung on." He goes, "Okay." So he kept saying, "Keep hanging on." So that was good.
Amherst Hall of Famer Don Stevens.
We'll catch up with you out here in a little bit. Right?
Oh, yeah. I got to do my video.
Don't run away. Yeah.
Make sure he's marking his scores properly. I feel like he's in a groove right now.
I'm not in charge.
So. No?
No. I don't have the card.
How's the leaderboard looking?
I don't know. I got to go on the app. There's an app with all the scores. I'm just hoping Blue Team is leading.
Yeah, okay.
Every year, I have the honor and pleasure to be the MC for the Coaches vs. Cancer 716 Golf Classic. It's happening next week down in Olean, St. Bonaventure, Bartlett Country Club. And as always, Mark Schmidt, the head coach at St. Bonaventure University, his wife Anita, the entire St. Bonaventure team and family, always amazing, gracious hosts. It's a great night. It's a great day. And we're going to talk about it right now and ways that you can get involved to help us, because obviously everybody listening has been impacted in some way, shape, or form by cancer. And that's what this is all about, is to making sure that we help make sure that we can do everything we can to combat cancer. And Mark Schmidt joins me right now on the West Her Hotline. Good morning, Coach. How are you?
Good morning, Sal. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm glad I'm talking to you because it gives me a little bit of a reprieve from talking about that 38-0 waxing last night by the Bills in Chicago. So thank you.
I saw that.
Yeah, I know.
What happened?
Well, you know, a long 4 days in Chicago. I think a little bit of sleepwalking there, but no excuse, Coach. You know, I mean, the Bills played their number twos. The Bears started with their ones, but even when the twos were the twos and the threes went against the threes, it just didn't go right. Take me into a coach right now. I mean, I'm not asking you to speak for Coach McDermott, of course. It's a
another sport. But when you just have just a clunker, a stinker, and your backups who are fighting for positions in a scrimmage in a preseason game just don't put it out there, what's the message? How do you approach things?
I just think you go back to practice and continue to work. It's just an exhibition game, as you know, and the Bills will be just fine. You know, I'm hoping the Patriots will be okay.
Yeah, I know. Well, they got a nice quarterback now. By the way, I met Julian Edelman last night for the first time.
Great guy. Great guy. Great player.
Yeah, he's doing really a lot of stuff with media now. He's doing well right there. Listen, next week, the Coaches versus Cancer 716 Golf Classic. The dinner is taking place Sunday night. And then, of course, the golf event on Monday. I am always honored to be a part of it. And you've been doing this for quite a while now. Why is it so special for you? Why do you continue to host down at St. Bonaventure with your group, your team, and your family?
Yeah, I just think it's really, really important that you know, you reach out. And as you said in the opening, everybody's affected by it. You know, if you speak and you have people stand up, anybody that's affected by it, the whole room is standing. It's just something that is close to Anita and me. And, you know, this is our fourth annual, you know, the fifth. We had the first year up in Buffalo. And, you know, our community has done a tremendous job in supporting it. We're honored that you come down every year, Sal, and be the MC. It's just we've raised over $500,000, you know, in our 5 years of doing this. And, you know, so it's something that the community comes out and really supports it. You know, Fran Dunphy is going to be our keynote speaker on Monday. And, you know, we give out those two awards, the Bob Lanier Impact Award that's going to be given to Sister Margaret. The former president at Bonaventure, who's done a tremendous job in our community and is a cancer survivor. And Mark Kenzie, who's a longtime Buffalo high school coach, whose son was had cancer. And, you know, he's done a tremendous job in raising money in the Buffalo area. And he's going to get the Jim and Kathy Sadlin Inspiration Award. So that's Sunday night. And then Monday is the golf. And then Fran speaks. But we still have some opportunities, you know, dinner tickets, you know, $75, both for Sunday and Monday. If they want to come to both, it's $140. And we have the online auction that's going on as we speak. And the website, Sal, is cvc716.acsgolf.org. I'll repeat that again, cvc716.acsgolf.org. We have over 50 items, you know, some Toronto Raptors tickets, basketball experiences where, you know, the winners can go to the A-10 tournament, which is in Pittsburgh this year. You know, we have an event. We're playing North Carolina down in Florida over Thanksgiving. That's another opportunity. And a bunch of Buffalo Bills and Sabre tickets and all of that. So hopefully people get online starting today and really, you know, do a good job in raising money for this event.
No doubt about it. And what's really struck me is the far-reaching tentacles of this event, you know, and I know Coaches versus Cancer has been happening around the country and here in this region where you are at St. Bonaventure. It's so amazing for me to see every year, you know, you see Greg Paulus from Niagara coming down and George Halkovich from UB coming down, but also people from around the country. I've met so many great, inspirational people who've not only just been involved in basketball, but just want to be a part of this to help raise some money. And that's what's really cool about this event. It's connecting people to really help other people.
That's all it is. You're exactly right. It's a great event. People look forward to it. I look forward to it every year. And we have a great committee, as you know. My wife Anita and Jeff Nix do a tremendous job, and there's others on this on the committee that work. You know, this is a 365 day thing, and I don't do much. It's the support systems that we have, and as I said earlier, the support that we get from the Olean area and Bartlett Country Club, it's fantastic, and people come from all over the country to come to this thing, and you know, we have a great time Sunday night and. Great, you know, no one really cares about the golf. It's just, you know, coming and playing, having fun, but really raising money for a great cause.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it's a great golf course, by the way. Bartlett's beautiful. I mean, it's a great golf course to go play around a golf.
I say it all the time for the budget that we have at Bartlett. It's one of the best golf courses in the country. It's beautiful, and you know, having an opportunity to play that, you know, I think people really enjoy it.
What is your basketball? When does that start this year? You have this going on now. We're obviously getting to college football season, but I know basketball is always just right around the corner, it seems like.
You know something, Sal, it's changed with this whole portal and NIL stuff. And, you know, our guys have been here. They left July 31st. They were here for 8 weeks. And we can work with them, you know, 8 hours a week and individuals and practice. And it's different now. We used to just do individual skill development. But now, because of the turnover that every team has, it's practice. You know, so we practice every day and, you know, for 8 weeks. And it was a little bit difficult because we have a couple or three or four foreign kids that couldn't get visas to get into the country. You know, so it's going to be when they arrive here September 1st, you know, now it's, you know, we had eight or nine guys that know what they're doing now a little bit because of, you know, the stuff that we put in. But now we have four or five guys that we're going to have to try to get them up to speed a little bit. So it's changed, but it's the way it is. And you got to accept it. You got to move on. And, you know, hopefully we can have another good season.
Yeah, and I think about this time last year or so, you guys kind of shocked the entire sports world when Woj came aboard. And obviously he left his position as the NBA insider to go back to his alma mater, which he loves so much. And gotten to know Woj a little bit over the last few years. I know how much he loves St. Bonaventure. Tell us about his role and what he's been doing for you over the last 12 months.
He's been tremendous. He's the general manager. He's the one that really deals with the NIL stuff, with the contracts, with all the agents. You know, you can see why he's been so successful in ESPN and Yahoo before that. He's totally committed to this thing, and he's working just as hard, maybe harder than he did when he was working at ESPN. But he's a valuable asset. You know, the relationships that he has, you know, I couldn't develop in the next 30 years if I wanted to. So he's really helped in the relationships with the agents, because the agents now are really, you know, not telling the kids where to go, but are really influential. You know, so the relationships that Woj has with them makes it a little bit easier. Plus, it takes a little bit off my plate in terms of negotiating contracts and, you know, it's something that he does. And he's instrumental in raising all the NIL money that we have. And he's done a tremendous job. Without him, you know, I think we'd be in a tough situation. So really happy that he's joined us and he's really excited about it. And, you know, he's going to be make a huge impact for us, you know, as we go forward.
Yeah, a couple months ago, I was in New York City. I go to Fanatics Fest, and I'm walking around. It's at the Javits Center, and I see this really tall redhead guy, and I'm like, man, that looks like a basketball player. And then there's Woj next to him, and of course, it was Joe Grahovic, is how you say his last name?
Yes, Grahovic.
Thank you. Tell us a little bit about Joe, because he's kind of become a guy that a little bit of a cult following with a little bit of a Bill Walton look, a transfer from California.
Yeah, it's an amazing story, Sal. He played high school basketball and then didn't play any college. And he was playing in, I think it was LA Fitness. And some guys saw him playing and they say, hey, you know, what college do you play at? He goes, I don't play college ball. I just work. And this guy got him in touch with Fullerton College, and he started playing. And, you know, he was homeless. He lived in his car. It's an unbelievable story. And, you know, Woj had some connection and went out there and built a really good relationship with the Fulton College basketball staff and with Joe and his family. And he's just a guy that is he's green, he's unique. He's really appreciative of everything that he's been given. And he's going to be a really good player. He does look like Bill Walton. I'm not sure he's going to be a, you know, top 50 player of all time, but just a really, you know, 6'9", 6'10", can shoot the ball, has skills, and he's really going to be somebody I think our fan base is really going to enjoy playing, watching. And he's just really unselfish. He's not, it's almost like he's not Americanized. He didn't play, you know, AAU basketball. He wasn't spoiled. It's like a breath of fresh air for a coach. And we're really looking forward to working with Joe and, you know, and trying to make him the best player he can be.
No, I love that for sure. And then last one for you, Coach. You touched on the portal. Is it just basically like a new team every year? I mean, you kind of have to approach it like that, right? I mean, I know you have some guys that stay and some guys who don't, but it seems no matter what program you look at, it's just such a different team every year now.
Yeah, that's just how it is. And some people agree with it, some people don't. But, yeah, it's every year, like this year, we have DeSante Bowen and Xander Wedlow are the only two players that are returning from last year's team. And, you know, some graduated, some left, and some left because of, you know, playing time, but most of them left because of money, you know. And, and you don't blame the players, you know. It's how the business works. If someone offers you more money and you think it's a better situation, you've got to go. And, you know, we had some good players that went to high major programs. But you just try to rebuild it. And, you know, in the past, you try to build programs. But now you just try to build a team for every single year. And that's what we've done the last 3 years. And hopefully we can do it again this year. I think we have some good players. And the big thing, Sal, is trying to get the players that aren't caught up in their individual stats are caught up in winning and helping winning and becoming better players and you know, looking at the big picture. And I think we have some players like that. And, you know, but time will tell. You know, when adversity hits, as you know, that's when you really can tell when you have a good player and a good person. So I think we do, and we'll start working when they get back here September 1st, and hopefully we'll have another successful season.
And then you guys open up October 29th against Alfred Exhibition, Bradley as well, Canisius on the schedule, and then things get rocking and rolling down in Olean. I mean, it's right around the corner, like I said. One more time, Coach, let's tell us, everybody, about Sunday night and Monday and where to go once again if they want to be a part of the Coaches versus Cancer 716 Golf Classic.
So Sunday night, you know, 5 o'clock, we have, you know, dinner and hors d'oeuvres and, you know, just like a social hour, and that's when the two awards are going to be given. And then on Monday, you know, we got golf, and then we have, you know, Fran Dunphy after that as the guest speaker. And as I said, there's a live auction that's going on right now, you know, cvc716.acsgolf.org. We still have dinner tickets, that they can buy, and those dinner tickets, I think, stop tomorrow.
Okay.
So if you want to buy those, you can do that in the next day. And also, you know, the other thing that I forgot, we you know, you talked about Woj. We have dinner with Woj too.
Oh.
And that's another auction item, which is, you know, I think, you know, plus it's dinner with Woj and then some tickets to a game, you know. So
I love it.
So we have a lot of good things, and just looking forward to be able to raise a lot of money this year so we can help, you know, people with, you know, Hope Lodge and you know, transportation to their doctor's appointments and so forth. So excited and looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to getting you down here.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm gonna tweet out the link for everybody so they can see where it is. Dinner with Woj is one of the auction items with all the different things you could take part in. You could see it right there. I'll tweet it out on my Twitter. Coach, looking forward to seeing you and everybody, and Anita, of course, next Sunday night. Always a pleasure and honor for me to be a part of it. So thanks again for letting everybody know, and I'll see you in about a week.
Thanks, Sal. Thanks for having me on.
All right, you got it. That is Coach Mark Schmidt, the head coach of the St. Bonaventure University men's basketball team. I will tweet out the link, cvc716.acsgolf.org. You have everything right there. The auction is right there. The tickets for the dinner, golf, everything. It's going to be an awesome Sunday night and Monday here at down in Olean, I should say.